and thank you all for standing by. At this time, I would like to inform all participants that your lines are on a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's call. Today's call is also being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn the call over to Benjamin Haynes. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Christy, and thank you all for joining us for today's briefing. We're joined by Dr. Jonathan Merman, Director of CDC's National Center for HIV, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention, and Dr. Leandro Mena, Director of CDC's Division of STD Prevention. They will both discuss newly released CDC STD data before taking your questions. I would now like to turn the call over to Dr. Merman.
Well, thank you, Benjamin, and good afternoon, everybody. And I appreciate your joining us during STD Awareness Week to discuss our latest insights into the state of STDs in America. In 2020, the COVID-19 pandemic dramatically disrupted life as we knew it. And while there were moments in 2020 when it felt like the world was standing still, sexually transmitted diseases were not. The unrelenting momentum of STDs continued even as prevention and treatment services were disrupted. New CDC data suggests that STDs increased during the first year of the pandemic. And despite an initial decrease in reported STDs early on in 2020, overall in 2020, cases of gonorrhea, syphilis, and congenital syphilis all surpassed their 2019 levels. By the end of 2020, primary and secondary syphilis cases increased 7%, gonorrhea cases increased 10%, and syphilis cases among newborns, or congenital syphilis, experienced the largest increase at 15%. Recent national increases in congenital syphilis are worrisome. Reported cases increased 235% between 2016 and 2020, and the consequences of congenital syphilis are the most severe. They include lifelong physical and mental health problems, miscarriage, or stillbirth. Unfortunately, we already know some STDs continued to increase in 2021 as well. Preliminary data indicate increases in syphilis and congenital syphilis last year, with congenital cases already surpassing 2020 levels. Over 2 million STD diagnoses a year is a heavy burden our nation cannot accept. And now I'd like to discuss what happened with chlamydia during 2020, a somewhat different but related story. Reported cases of chlamydia declined 13% in 2020, and this decline is concerning because chlamydia is often asymptomatic, meaning a person does not have signs or symptoms of illness, and their infection is often identified through in-person screening, such as during a routine pap smear. However, in 2020, clinics reduced routine screening due to disruptions from the COVID-19 pandemic, and many people deferred non-urgent issues to avoid visiting a healthcare center. Other factors may also have reduced opportunities for STD screening, such as unemployment, which can cause lapses in health insurance coverage. Because of this, the decline in reported chlamydia cases is likely due to decreased STD screening and underdiagnosis during the pandemic, rather than a reduction in new infections. The COVID-19 pandemic strained our nation's already crumbling public health infrastructure, and we will be working for some time to document the impact of these disruptions on our nation's STI epidemics, but we cannot wait for full understanding to act. STDs threaten the health of too many people in America, and our collective obligation is to change that. So I'll now turn it over to Dr. Mena to discuss disparities in STDs and what is needed to turn this epidemic around.
Thank you, Dr. Merman. The COVID-19 pandemic has increased awareness of something we have long known about STDs, that long-standing social and economical factors, such as poverty and health insurance status, create barriers, increase health risks, and often results in worse health outcomes for some people. While the 2020 data that showed that STDs increased among many groups, some racial and ethnic minority groups, gay and bisexual men, and our nation's youth continue to bear the brunt of the epidemic. Over half of reported STDs were among 15 to 24-year-olds. Disproportionate STD rates continue among many racial and ethnic minority groups, including people who are African American or Black, Hispanic or Latino, American Indian or Alaska Native, are Native Hawaiians or other Pacific Islanders. And 43% of primary and secondary syphilis cases in 2020 occurred among gay and bisexual men. This data illustrates the factors such as lack of access to regular medical care, discrimination, and stigma continue to stand in the way of quality sexual health care for everyone who needs it. If we are to make lasting progress against STDs in this country, we have to understand the systems that create inequities and work with partners to change them. There is much to be done to rebuild, innovate, and expand STD prevention in the U.S. to close prevention gaps and create lasting change. First, we must prioritize and focus on efforts to regain lost ground. This means in-the-field support for prevention and surveillance programs at the state and local levels, including disease investigation, contact tracing, training, community engagement, and partnerships. Second, it's critical to expand access to quality and stigma-free STD services. People need to receive care in places that are more accessible and go beyond traditional STD clinics. For example, retail pharmacy clinics, LGBTQ centers, and syringe services, or substance use treatment programs. Lastly, many groups have a role to play in turning the STI epidemic around. Local healthcare systems, clinics, and community-based organizations are uniquely situated to respond to emerging STD threats. These groups can play a critical role in promoting STD prevention at the local level and empower people to prioritize their sexual health. The healthcare industry and private sector players have a role and responsibility to develop and deliver new STD testing and treatment innovations that are desperately needed. And of course, healthcare providers play a pivotal role in reducing stigma and integrating STD prevention and sexual health into their routine practices and creating a welcoming environment to all people. Despite the alarming data and trends published today, it is important to emphasize that we have it in us as a nation to tackle this STI epidemic. The National STI Strategic Plan envisions the U.S. as a place where STIs are prevented, and where every person receives high-quality prevention, care, and treatment while living free from stigma and discrimination. I believe this vision can become a reality in our nation with the help of partners and the resolve of many. Thank you all for being here today. I will now hand it back to Benjamin.
Thank you, Drs. Merman and Mena. Christy, we are ready to take questions.
Thank you. Our first question comes from Dan Ringo of BuzzFeed News. Sir, your line is open.
Thank you. It's Dan Vergano at BuzzFeed News. I was wondering if you could say anything as well about another sexually transmitted disease, which is HIV, what you're seeing there. In particular, there have been reports of outbreaks in populations where it spreads both is sexually transmitted and by people who use injection drugs. There have been, like, reports from different cities. What can you say anything about what you're seeing there? Thank you very much.
So for HIV, we saw similar disruptions in services. And both testing done at clinics and through community-based organizations reduced in the beginning of 2020. And over time, we will be able to better understand what happened to the epidemiology of HIV during that year and 2021. But similar to the STI situation, COVID-19 strained an already crumbling public health infrastructure. And health department reductions in screening, treatment, and prevention and partner services contributed to what we saw with the increases in STDs for the years before the pandemic and during it. And I would just also like to say that this is to reverse the trends that we're seeing in STDs, we need a whole nation approach. We need both local healthcare systems, clinics, and community-based organizations to respond to some of the emerging STD trends, because they play a critical role in promoting prevention at the local level and empower people to prioritize their sexual health. We need multi-sector solutions like healthcare and industry and private sector. And we need provider solutions. Healthcare providers can, you know, who ask about people's sexual health and incorporate into their routine practice. And also what we'll need is new scientific discoveries. We have very few vaccines that are effective for STIs in general, and we need them for gonorrhea, chlamydia, and syphilis. We need treatments that are better or more easily taken than the ones we have, and we need tests that can be that can be done in the field.
If I can add, you know, I think, you know, it's important to recognize that HIV, you know, sexually transmitted infection, you know, and COVID, you know, in many ways, you know, and we saw with the pandemic, right, you know, not only increased awareness, but really COVID in many ways forced us, you know, to act on something that we have long known, you know, in STDs and HIV, which is that the long-standing social and economical factors, right, such as poverty and health insurance status, create, you know, true barriers and increase people's experiences with health risk, you know, and often results in worse health outcomes, you know, for some populations, where it's HIV or STDs. And so as Dr. Mermin mentioned, you know, in addition to addressing these disparities, we really, you know, have to provide support on the ground for prevention and surveillance programs at the state and local level. And this means disease intervention specialists, training, community engagement, and partnerships.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Again.
Thank you. The next question comes from Hillary Burick of Insider. Your line is open.
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my question. I wanted to ask more about the congenital syphilis cases and the rise in cases. Do you have any sense of the number of those that, or the percentage of those that are to mothers without health insurance? And I'm wondering if you could talk a little more specifically about what more could be done to increase syphilis screening among women without regular prenatal care or without health insurance. Is that something that the CDC has any initiatives around?
You know, unfortunately, we don't have data on the insurance status of cases reported with congenital syphilis or their mothers, right? You know, we really know that the rising congenital syphilis, you know, parallels, you know, the increase in primary and secondary syphilis among women overall. So the increase is driven in part because more women of reproductive age are getting syphilis. The surveillance data don't tell us, you know, what is driving this increase in reproductive age women. But we have data that offers some small clues. Among syphilis cases in women, we're seeing increases in the percentage of cases reporting behaviors that put them at increased risk of syphilis, such as injection drug use, meth use, and having sex with partners who inject drugs. That doesn't explain everything. There are many other ongoing factors that are likely driving the resurgence of syphilis and congenital syphilis in the United States. For example, the disparities accessing consistent care during pregnancy, unstable housing, lack of medical insurance. At CDC, we're really, you know, having the first step, which is presenting the data and the national trends, you know, so people can, at the local level, act. But we're also ensuring, you know, policies and procedures support pregnant people obtaining prenatal services and recommended syphilis screenings and treatment. We are collaborating with maternal child health programs, community-based organizations, and providers to address prevention gaps, especially for those women who may not have health insurance. And then, you know, for individuals, you know, talking to health care providers about STD testing, considering STD prevention options that work for them, and ensuring immediate treatment for people who are identified with syphilis and their sexual partners is important.
And then if I could just ask one follow-up, you mentioned the IV drug use. Do you have any sort of statistics to back that up in terms of what percentage of the mothers are users?
You know, we don't have those data yet. We don't.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Virginia Langmaid of CNN. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call or my question. You spoke about this a bit, but is there a concern with underreporting that goes beyond chlamydia? Are you concerned with the already increased rates that we see of gonorrhea and syphilis, that because rates overall were down in 2020, that there's some population that's being missed, that there's an additional increase on top of what's already been reported?
Yes, you know, while we cannot confirm whether, you know, underreported or undiagnosed STDs, you know, increased, you know, in 2020, we do know that certain factors, you know, taking place last year, you know, because of the COVID pandemic, likely contributed to increase in the cases going, a number of cases going undiagnosed and as a result being underreported. And this includes, there was overall reduced in screening. You know, many healthcare clinics limited in-person visits to symptomatic cases or closed entirely. And CDC guidance directed states and local health departments to prioritize diagnosis and treatment of syphilis and gonorrhea cases. We know that there were limited resources and shortages in STD test kits and lab supplies. Health department staff shifted to COVID work, affecting STD contact tracing and reporting. I mentioned earlier that there were lapses in health insurance coverage. Because of the increasing unemployment, many, you know, individuals deferred routine screening visits. So overall, we really think that we recognize that there is really much that needs to be done to rebuild, innovate, and expand STD prevention in the U.S. to close gaps and create, you know, lasting change.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Asan Ahmed of AFP. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. Yeah, I was wondering, is there a background trend of rising STD? Was there already a background trend of that happening, and it's the case that the pandemic accelerated that? And if so, what was responsible for the background rising rates anyway? Like pre-pandemic, what was responsible? What were the drivers of increase? Thank you.
So there has been several years of dramatically increasing incidence of gonorrhea and syphilis and, to a lesser extent, chlamydia in the United States. And so the COVID-19 epidemic came at a very difficult time for STI control. We had already a strained kind of crumbling public health infrastructure. There are many communities in the United States that do not have STI specialty clinics. So what that led to was an exacerbation of the already increasing trends. So even in the beginning of 2020, when there appeared to be fewer reports of new STDs compared to the prior year, by the end of the year, the rates were so high that the overall incidence in 2020 was 10% higher for gonorrhea and 7% higher for syphilis and 15% higher for congenital syphilis compared to 2019. And as Dr. Mena had highlighted, there really are several factors that contributed to those initial increases that we were seeing, but that also made it harder to respond during the COVID-19 epidemic, including reduced in-person healthcare services, resulting in less frequent STD screening, diversion of public health staff to respond to the COVID-19 epidemic, and supply issues with testing and lab equipment. At the STD program, resources were also heavily diverted to address COVID-19 because some of the public health workers who are good at contact tracing and partner services normally work in the world of STIs were shifted to be able to do that for COVID-19, the emergency at the time. So these new data do suggest that STDs in the U.S. increased during the 2020, the first year of the COVID-19 pandemic, and they do provide the clearest picture yet of the impact of COVID-19 on our STIs. And honestly, there's much to be done to rebuild, innovate, and expand STD prevention in the country over the next few years, or we're going to continue to see increasing trends of STIs in the country.
Can I have a quick follow-up, or should I ask later?
Sure.
In terms of the baseline, which was already increasing, where does that compare with to peer countries, other advanced countries? Where pre-pandemic, obviously, I'm sure we don't have the post-pandemic data yet. But sort of G7 countries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, pre-pandemic, certainly, you know, we have seen increasing STIs really globally. You know, STIs have been increasing, you know, all around the world. You know, but I think it's important, you know, that as we look at increases, you know, that we recognize that while STIs are increasing in 2020, and they have been increasing for a few years, right, in many groups, you know, some racial and ethnic minority groups, gay and bisexual men, and our nation's youth continue to experience higher rates of STDs. You know, this in many ways highlights, you know, the nation's failure to provide sufficient quality sexual health care for everyone who needs it. You know, we really must empower people so they can protect their sexual health. You know, as a nation, we must commit to make sure that no one can be left behind. The nation must address and overcome longstanding conditions and barriers to health equity faced by too many people living in the U.S. today.
And as, you know, Dr. Mena had mentioned, you know, for nearly a decade, STDs have been increasing in the country, and public health resources have not kept pace. Communities and health departments are struggling. So prioritizing prevention and control of STDs will be critical to empowering the nation to a healthy future.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Daniel Chang of the Miami Herald. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you for taking my question and for having this call today. I was going to ask if you had any, if you could share any information on differences among states or regions in terms of the rates that you're seeing. And it appears that this is also having an impact, at least in Florida, on some other diseases that may or may not be sexually transmitted. For instance, right now there's a large ongoing outbreak of meningococcal disease in Florida, and the health department, as well as the CDC, have reported on this and advised that folks get vaccinated, but they're emphasizing gay and bisexual men, and as well as young people, which seems to be the same group that is seeing some increases in the STIs that you're reporting here. Can you put this into context for us? I mean, maybe it is all sort of due to what Dr. Merman just said and Dr. Mena about the divergence of resources and the just the shortages of supplies that we've had. But I'm interested in sort of regional or state information that might be contained in this report and how this fits into the context of other diseases as well, whether or not they're STDs specifically, meningococcal disease.
You know, that's a great question. You know, we really don't see, you know, certainly from 2019, major, you know, regional differences. You know, certainly nothing new. I mean, we know that the South has historically been disproportionately affected by all these, you know, sexually transmitted infections. We know, particularly for syphilis, the Western region and the South have a disproportionately increasing cases. But I think that the biggest difference within region, within every community, is that the disparities that exist, you know, where certain populations, men who are with men, gay and bisexual men, some racial and ethnic minorities and youth are disproportionately affected. In relationship to your comment about the report of meningococcal infection among men who are with men, we are aware of that. And over the years, there have been, you know, several, you know, outbreaks similar to this, you know, that has happened. We're not really, we don't know yet, you know, what is the cause, what's causing this. Meningococcal disease is typically, you know, happens, you know, to college age, you know, kids, and that's why, you know, vaccination for this population is recommended. And we'll be following, you know, the outbreak to learn more about it and try to understand what's driving this. You know, bottom line, I mean, again, we recognize that that they are, you know, again, that STDs, you know, again, continue to increase. And that, again, our nation's, you know, failure in many ways to provide, you know, sufficient quality health care to everyone who needs it, you know, in many ways is contributing to these outbreaks.
And just a quick note, the cause of gonorrhea is a bacterium called Neisseria gonorrhoeae. The cause of the meningococcal outbreak in Florida is Neisseria meningitidis. And there's a recent research that was just published that indicated that that the vaccine, one vaccine for meningococcal disease can have collateral benefits in reducing the risk of gonorrhea by about 30%. And so there's more research going into that, but it does show at least some hope that in the future we could be developing effective and safe vaccines against gonorrhea, which would help us more successfully reverse some of the trends that we've been seeing over the past 10 years.
Well, next question. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jessica Glenes of The Guardian. Your line is open.
Hi, this is Jessica Glenza with The Guardian. I am wondering, and I'm sure this is not contained in your report because this, what I'm asking is about more recent trends, but I'm wondering if the redistribution of contact tracers to trace COVID-19 and the shortage of test supplies have eased at all as we've gone through the pandemic?
Yes, you know, we know that among the several factors that contributed to the initial decline in reports, you know, the diversion of public health staff to respond to COVID was one of them. We know that at least the half of our programs discontinued critical DIS field work for most of 2020. As a matter of fact, at least one-fourth of the DIS workforce was actually permanently deployed, you know, to COVID-19 in the jurisdictions. We also know that more than half of our programs reported shortages in testing and treatment supplies, you know, in April 2020. We believe that as things, you know, normalize, you know, these things will also come up, you know, will normalize again, taking us to a pre-pandemic, you know, level of services.
And through some recent resources that we received, we were able to put out $200 million a year to expand the DIS workforce. And that program is designed to help prevent the disruptions we saw during COVID-19 by investing in the surge capacity needed to respond when public health emergencies and outbreaks occur, and also to have the workforce necessary to be able to better respond to the STI epidemics that we've been seeing over the past decade. I think, yeah.
Christy, we have time for two more questions, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Renee Onque of the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thank you for taking my question. I was wondering if antibiotic resistance has anything to do with the rise of cases that you're seeing, and if you could speak towards that a little bit, if it does factor in.
Yes, you know, we track antibiotic resistance, especially to Neisseria gonorrhea, through our gonococcal isolate surveillance project. We estimated, you know, overall the resistance to at least one antibiotic in at least, you know, 50% of our reported cases. But there were no cases identified resistance to currently recommended antibiotics. So we do not believe that current increases in gonorrhea cases, case reports, are caused by antimicrobial resistance.
And there's no resistance to the recommended treatment for syphilis, which is penicillin, and chlamydia is also readily treated. So we are keeping a careful watch on antimicrobial resistance, particularly for gonorrhea, because it has become resistant to so many antibiotics. But at this point, that's not the cause of the increases that we've seen.
Thank you for answering my question.
And our last question, please.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Pen Huang. Your line is open from NPR.
Hi, thanks. This is Pen Huang from NPR. There's been a lot of talk about modernizing reporting data collection at CDC, and I'm wondering if that's something that might extend to your program as well. You know, if underreporting, underdiagnosis is part of the problem, are there ways that you're looking at sort of changing the way that the data is collected and reported?
I could speak. There is a large data modernization initiative at CDC that will positively change our ability to rapidly gather and analyze data and share that information with both health departments and the public. There will be benefits for our STI program from that larger initiative. What happened during the beginning of the COVID-19 epidemic looks like part of that was actually decreased testing and diagnosis, as well as potentially decreased STI incidence itself, because there's some indications that people did change sexual behavior during the first few months of the year. But we are reporting our surveillance data more rapidly every year because our systems are becoming more efficient. And just to emphasize, you know, that these are important ways that CDC is improving both our surveillance, our science, and using information to help the public's health. The National STI Strategic Plan also continues to envision that the U.S. is a place where STDs are prevented and where every person receives high-quality prevention, care, and treatment free from stigma and discrimination. And we at CDC believe this can be a reality with a whole nation's approach. Yes. Do you have anything to add, Dr. Mena?
I just want to say, you know, that again, as we're talking about 2020 data, you know, state and local health departments, you know, really urgently shifted their resources to the COVID-19 response in mid-2020, which resulted in delays in reporting the 2020 STD data to CDC. With many of the STD program staff deployed to the COVID-19 response in 2021, as where we expect, you know, additional reporting delays for 2021 data. But we are exploring, you know, options, you know, to publish 2021 data as rapidly as possible, including presenting preliminary 2021 primary and secondary syphilis and congenital syphilis data alongside with this, you know, final 2020 report.
So information is important, but action is necessary.
Thank you, Dr. Merman and Dr. Mena, and thank you all for joining us today. If you have further questions, please contact the main media line at 404-639-3286, or you can email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference. You may disconnect your call. Thank you and have a good day.
Thank you, everyone.